Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Dr. Stephen Hales, author of Rex, 150 Years of the School of Design. It is a great pleasure to welcome Dr. Stephen Hales back to The Reading Life. Before he retired in 2018, he was one of New Orleans' most beloved doctors, the founder of Hales Pediatrics. And in 2017, you were shouting, "Hail Rex," as he rode down St. Charles Avenue on the King Float. And just as New Orleans often provides inspiration for new endeavors, so it is for Stephen Hales, who is here today in his capacity as the Rex Organization's historian and archivist, the author of the 2010 volume Rex, An Illustrated History of the School of Design, and today we celebrate his beautiful new book, Rex, 150 Years of the School of Design, with a foreword by Walter Isaacson. The book is published by Arthur Hardy Enterprises. It is a beautiful volume about this influential crew's role, not only in the history of Carnival, but in the history of our city. Stephen Hales, welcome.
It's so good to be here, Susan. Wonderful to see you.
And wonderful to see this beautiful book. Everybody who walks by reaches for it. So I'll be lucky to get home with it. But talk about getting this project underway, because this is something that takes an enormous amount of work. The archival material, the beautiful images. You had a lot to look at and think about when you were getting underway.
You know, 150 years is a wonderful vantage point, that a century, a half of beautiful history. It's been written about many times, but an effort to go back and gather kind of a decade-by-decade narrative of this rich history was indeed an undertaking. I have to quickly say that I realize I'm neither a trained historian nor a professional writer. But in trying to write this history, I hope I've done it justice. There are so many interesting characters and so many ebbs and flows through this period of time that capturing that in a page and in images has been a challenge, but a delightful one.
Well, talk about some of the ways being Rex yourself informed your writing of this.
Yeah, 2017 was an interesting year. When I am at the Rex Den and I look at the portraits of past kings of Carnival, I see really extraordinary men and a library of community service that's very true to the pro bono publico traditions of the organization. Really an honor to join them. I never expected to do that. I wasn't born here. I thought I had the very best job in the realm in collecting artifacts and documenting history and writing about that. I'm glad I got to go back to doing that. The days of around Mardi Gras in 2017 are a very, very happy blur. But indeed, really an honor to be included in that group. But also, it feels a connection to history that is that helped in writing this. I love the continuity of tradition. I love a century and a half of year-by-year traditions renewed, innovations added to that.
Yeah.
And documenting that from that perspective was a privilege and a joy.
You actually collect Carnival memorabilia yourself, don't you?
Yes. Post-Katrina, in those floods, we lost virtually everything we had that documented the organization history, and those collections were very, very limited. After Katrina, we really focused on trying to rebuild those collections and to display them more fully and to tell our story a little bit better. in adding spaces to the den where we could really add that museum function, we began to open the den more. And one of the very happy realities of the past 10 years has been to see just a flood of school children coming in to the den, to see not only a parade that is about ready to roll and to learn about that tradition and the art involved in that, but also to be able to see the history of the beginnings of Carnival. Rex didn't invent Carnival. Rex wasn't the first to parade. I mean, Comus paraded in 1857, but Comus was very much more private, and there was a need for a public face of Carnival. So in 1872, Rex's founders really responded to that need and invented the King of Carnival, Carnival Colors, the song If Ever I Cease to Love was selected, and a tradition began. And that really is the historic anchor of a celebration that, if it doesn't define New Orleans, comes close to that. And it's expanded in all directions. I mean, we look at how broad and diverse and inclusive the celebration of Carnival is in New Orleans now. It is just part of who we are. And it goes back 150 years in our history, and I think that helps anchor it and gives it continuity and meaning.
I'm curious about some of the things you learned as you wrote. One of the things that struck me looking at this book was how much tactile history there is. You know, you all worked so hard to stabilize Rex jewels and costumes and photographs and preserve all these things, even though the parade itself is ephemeral and disappears except for a few traditional floats. But, you know, there is a lot to look at and hold and think about in a way.
Yeah, they're wonderful art forms that are associated with Carnival. We think of floats, and that's certainly one. I mean, but the artists that designed those floats and the costumers and the seamstresses and the painters and then the paper arts, the documents, the proclamations, the scrolls, the these beautifully lithographed remnants of Carnival history, the jewelers.
The jewelers, I mean.
Yes. I mean, these early, the court jewelry, really almost for the first century, came from overseas. And part of what we've been able to document that has not been shown before, some of the sketches that were used to create those crowns and scepters, we located those in the collection of a gentleman in Germany and were able to bring many of them in. Many of these things are going to be shown just in a beautiful way in an exhibition at the Louisiana State Museum at the Presbyter. Wayne Phillips there, we're working closely together. This will just be a beautiful exhibition that will showcase those arts. The images in my book illustrate a lot of that, but being able to see those artifacts in person, many things that that have not been shown before. One little happy sidebar here has been to learn about so many of these interesting people. I loved getting to know Adrienne Lawrence. Adrienne Lawrence was Queen of Carnival in 1906, but as a little girl, she was just passionate about reading. Her parents indulged that. She had a formidable library. A few years after she reigned as Queen of Carnival, she married an attorney, a gentleman from New Roads in Pointe Coupee Parish, packed up all her books and moved there. They never had children, and she wanted to share her books. So she basically made her library a lending library for the parish. Later on, she and her husband contributed money and land to build the public library there. All of her Carnival artifacts, her crown, her scepter, her mantle, beautiful pictures, have been preserved there and almost a shrine to who everyone called Miss Adrienne. And they've never left there, but the library has agreed to lend those for the exhibition at the State Museum, and they'll be on display there. And when we look at that, I hope we're able to also tell that story about a book-loving little girl who grew up to be Queen of Carnival, moved to Pointe Coupee Parish. She passed on that love of books. One of her nieces that frequently visited there was Corinne Claiborne, better known to us later as Lindy Claiborne Boggs. And of course,
had a love of books of her own.
Absolutely. And mother of Cokie Roberts.
Right.
I loved hearing your interview of Steve Roberts not long ago, his beautiful book about Cokie. These through lines of tradition and connection, I think, are very meaningful. Carnival is ephemeral, and it's supposed to be just that. But it also creates history and traditions, and some of the people who I hope I've been able to describe well and tell their stories well have really enriched that tradition.
Well, talk about some of the float designers. I mean, I was always in love with Louis Fisher.
Yeah.
I thought, such a drama queen, you know, can tell by her pictures.
Indeed. I mean, Louis Fisher, beautiful designs. There were four Newcomb art school students who were responsible for 50 or 60 years of Rex's float designs. Louis Fisher, Sunila Bauer Alexander. Sunila Bauer Alexander's sketches just soar. They are just spectacular. But they're almost crowded out sometimes by the meticulous instructions she's giving to the float builders.
Which I'm sure they love.
I want this red to be this red and not that red.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be just like this and not like that. She drove them crazy. I mean, you couldn't build a float to satisfy Sunila's sketches. The creative tension probably was an understatement, but still magnificent artist. Those sketches, and I've put several into the book, along with several of Louis Fisher's, and then Pique Reese, who took over later,
yes.
Leda Ploche. I mean, these are formidable artists, and to be able to devote their art to such an ephemeral art form, they deserve to be not only well documented, but their stories needed to be told also.
And so many women.
Yes.
Are tied into the story of Rex.
Kingdoms are always about kings, right? one of the things we were able to do in putting this book together was to assemble nearly a full set of images of Queens of Carnival. There have been walls full of the portraits of Kings of Carnival at King's room, Rex's room at Antoine's and at the Den. There's never been a set of images of Queens of Carnival. So we set out to find them. And it was quite a search. We had genealogists all over the world looking for some of these images, and we got all but one of them.
I keep my fingers crossed that one shows up eventually.
Jessie Hay was the fifth Queen of Carnival, and her father was from Scotland, and they moved back to Scotland a few years after she reigned as Queen of Carnival. We had genealogists trying to chase down an image there, never could find it. But in each of these chapters, there is a collection of portraits of the kings and queens for that decade, and only Jessie Hay is missing.
Well, more recently, there's an amazing portrait of all the kings of Carnival wearing masks.
Yes.
Not the carnival kind of mask either, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, the Carnival Kings Club has met for a long, long time, but I'm sure that's the first time they've met with personalized masks.
I know. That was just amazing. If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Stephen Hales, author of Rex, 150 Years of the School of Design. We'll be right back. I was struck by how the currents of history run through this book. And so talk a little bit about that. I mean, you write about times of war, police strikes, financial depression, the times of rebuilding after terrible hurricanes, and of course, more recently, COVID. So talk about the real sweep and scope of this.
It is a sweep of history. And if there is a through line there, I see it in a real investment in the motto pro bono publico, for the public good. What does the city need now? That was one set of needs in 1872. Post-Reconstruction, New Orleans was a tough place politically, struggling to get back on its feet commercially. Rex's founders thought by organizing a daytime parade and making that a big public spectacle, They could make people happier. They could attract visitors to the city. They succeeded in that dramatically. Different challenges in different decades. 1881, an opportunity for reconciliation, bringing Union troops that had been adversaries in to march in the Rex Parade and to celebrate together and to effectively this very dramatic act of reconciliation. If we fast forward to more recent times, the police strike in 1979, Rex leaders were instrumental in saying, look, we're not going to let Carnival be held hostage to a labor action, and pulled the parades from the streets. Into the 1990s, the anti-discrimination ordinance was a challenging and divisive time. I give so much credit to Rex leaders at that point who worked really carefully with city officials and with other organizations and with Councilwoman Dorothy May Taylor to find a compromise, to find a way through that, and did that successfully. And then if we go into far more recent history, the post-Katrina challenges of this city.
Right.
What does the city need? Well, the city desperately needed to be able to open schools. Children needed to become able to come back to this city. We needed to be able to provide a better opportunity in education for those children. I just am really proud of what the Rex organization did in stepping in to invest in public schools in New Orleans. The Pro Bono Publico Foundation this year will pass $10 million in investments. And our members serve on boards supporting the goal of providing an excellent school for every child in the city. That is very different from 1872, but it's completely consistent with a commitment to doing the right thing and the needed thing for the city, pro bono publico. So there is that continuity. Decade by decade, what does the city need? How can we respond to that?
I want to know what your favorite carnival ritual might be. What's your personal ritual? You know, one of Anne Rice's is to go out to the Rex Parade. Have you ever read her description of that?
No.
She would leave her house on St. Charles Avenue and go out and touch the Rex float, the King float, and then go back inside. You know, everybody has that little thing they do, you know? What are some of those little things that mean a lot to you?
I think there's some public things that I think anchor this. One of the key moments for me is when Rex toasts the mayor and the mayor toasts Rex at Gallier Hall. In 2017, when I greeted Mayor Mitch Landrieu, I reminded him that my predecessors had been greeting his predecessors at that very place for nearly 150 years.
Mm-hmm.
And next year it will be 150 years.
Yeah.
But that moment and that place resonated for me. There are quieter moments. One that and I put a picture of this in my book, just a quiet moment with Bo Bassage, who was a beloved Rex leader, also associated with the crew of Proteus, and just a wonderful volunteer in the city.
City Park.
City Park loved him, and he loved City Park. But we started in 2012, I think, a courtyard ceremony before the parade rolls on Mardi Gras Day. The Marine Band plays the Star Spangled Banner, the flag's raised. In 2013, Bo, who was a very proud Marine veteran of World War II, advanced in years, helped to raise the flag. And as the national anthem was played, he saluted, but his right arm was unsteady, and he reached over and steadied that arm with his left hand. And I watched him. He held that salute through the whole Star Spangled Banner. Afterwards, the Marine Band reassembled and played the Marine hymn for Bo Bassage. And Bo stood there, an active duty Marine general on one side, another Marine veteran on the other. And I included that picture in my book because it was just such a special moment. Mm-hmm. A public moment, but yet very personal and very significant. Bo is just another example to me of what Rex stands for. Mm-hmm. A man of integrity, a man of strength, a man of service, and absolutely devoted to this community.
In a house, in a square, in a quadrant, in the street, in the lane, in the road. Turn to the left, on the right hand, you see there is my true love's abode. I go there according and cooing to my love like a dove, and swearing on my bended knee if ever I cease to love. May sheep heads grow on apple trees if ever I cease to love.
Welcome back. My guest is Stephen Hales, author of Rex, 150 Years of the School of Design. I imagine you did not have a hard time getting Walter Isaacson to write the foreword to this book, because he's somebody who's thought about this for a long time.
I am so glad Walter Isaacson came home. He and Kathy are here and so engaged in the city.
Right.
And I'm so grateful for his preface, just a beautiful essay. If my decade-by-decade history is sort of wandering around looking at the trees, Walter's essay looks at the forest, and he tells us why that matters. And just a wonderful friend to me, to the city. Walter and I serve on the New Schools for New Orleans board together. A brilliant writer, and really grateful for his contribution to this book.
And somebody who's been thinking about New Orleans for a very long time.
Yeah, Walter Isaacson went away, but he never really went away.
Right. We knew he'd be home sooner or later. Now, one of the things that personally that I love the most about Carnival is that for so many of the people I know, it's, and we know this in New Orleans anyway, it's an all-year-round thing. It's a spiritual practice. You think of the Indians making their suits all year long. You think of the muses glittering those shoes all year long. And just all those Zulus and their coconuts, it is something we work at. So describe what that's meant to you as a person over the years.
It is year-round. It's a year-round process artistically. I love hanging around the rec stand. Most of the year, there are only a few people there, several artists working at any given time. But there are wonderful ghosts there. You know, it is, I'm, you know, Sanella Bauer Alexander and George Soulier, who, not George Soule, but who was the builder who tried to keep her happy all those years. And so many others, captains, kings. There's just so much history there. So as the year's rhythm goes on, float sketches, the floats come back, they're whited out, all the sculptures go away. They start over again. They sketch, they paint, they sculpt, they put them back together again for that brief time on the street. That's really magical. And being able to also have our history displayed there and our archives there lets that history come together. It helps connect us as a people. I don't think this city ever feels as united and as close as it does on Mardi Gras Day. Mm-hmm. This is a celebration that in its antiquity, in its deep roots in history, and in its active evolution and active expression brings us together in wonderful ways. Rex has been part of that for 150 years, and it pleases me that the organization holds on to tradition, but still adapts and grows as the city changes and grows. This is a different organization than it was 150 years ago, but it's still true to those founding visions of serving the city's needs, pro bono publico, of celebrating together, of beautiful artistry that has been traditions maintained over that long. That's just really rare.
Don't ever say you're not an historian again, because you are. We've been talking with Dr. Stephen Hales, Rex of 2017, whose beautiful new book is Rex, 150 Years of the School of Design. You can meet him Tuesday, November 30th at 6 p.m. at Garden District Bookshop, when he appears along with Walter Isaacson. Stephen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The Friends of the New Orleans Public Library celebrate the book sale grand reopening at Algiers Regional Library. That's Saturday, November 20th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the library, 3014 Holiday Drive. Words and Music, a literary feast in New Orleans, continues this weekend in its virtual form, concluding with an evening with Louisiana State Poet Laureate Mona Lisa Saloy, Sunday, November 20th at 6 p.m. Tickets available at Eventbrite, and to check out the whole schedule, look at wordsandmusic.org. David McGee discusses and signs Dear William, A Father's Memoir of Addiction, Recovery, Love, and Loss, Tuesday, November 23rd at 6 at Octavia Books. Johnette Downing celebrates the release of her new board book, Five Little Possums, Saturday, November 27th from 2 to 3:30 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. Dr. Stephen Hales appears with Walter Isaacson discussing and signing the new book, Rex, 150 Years of the School of Design, Thursday, November 30th, starting at 5 at the Garden District Bookshop. This is a ticketed event. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellas Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.